Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and welcome to this edition of the Sports Reporters podcast, podcast incarnation of the long-running TV show on ESPN. That was Sunday mornings. We do the podcast Mondays and Thursdays. Gives us a great opportunity to wrap up the weekend, and here in Spartanland, as they now have renamed the state of Michigan, all things are green and rosy, coming up green, because 13 apparently turned the magic number for Tom Izzo against Duke. He had been 1-11 in his previous 12. But I think a very well-coached game, a very well-executed game, a great play called at the end, not for the star player, Cassius Winston, but for the old guy on the team, Kenny Goins, to make a huge shot over Zion Williamson, who leaves the tournament and joins many a big name in the NBA, and he'll be a big name in the NBA, who never saw a Final Four. And the story of the year, Duke and their freshmen are out just short of Minneapolis, and Michigan State joins a trio of interesting teams. Let's start with this game, though. What do we make of what happened here?
Well, Mitch, you talked on it. I mean, Tom just drew up two great plays at the end, and the one and done aspect of this becomes always compelling in moments like this, because Coach Krzyzewski had a very interesting line afterwards. I'm sure you both saw it. They played older, okay? And, you know, they've got a veteran team. Villanova had a veteran team. And in the biggest moment of the season for Michigan State and for Duke, after all the near misses for Duke, they did not seal the sideline, and they let that kid loose, and he ran away with their basketball season.
This should be noted right now that of the among the four teams at the Final Four, 7% of their total points in this tournament were scored by freshmen among the four of them. So the experience thing is very much a story of the of,
and especially
of the
down the stretch yesterday. Don't you think so, Bobby? I mean, down the stretch, it just looked like one team was way more mature. And the other thing was, They couldn't find number one at the end when they needed him.
Well, not just down the stretch, though. I thought the beginning, they really looked bad. And in fact, I believe Krzyzewski screamed at them, that was the worst 4 minutes you've ever played, you know, worst opening 4 minutes. And the next 4 minutes weren't a whole lot better. They looked like they forgot who they were. And that's what often happens with freshman dominated teams when they get to the absolute biggest games. And we're going to see come next weekend how much that's true or not. But, you know, in the days when we used to brag about, wow, these guys are loaded with freshmen, there was like a caveat to that. That was, that means they're going to have great sophomores. That's not what it means anymore.
No,
it means like you're going to play your one shot with your freshmen, and then they're all going to be gone. This Duke team doesn't exist next year. So, yeah, you're right, Mike. I mean, a team that, it's not like they're all seniors, by the way, but they do have one fifth-year senior, Goins, who made the biggest shot of all, and Winston's not a freshman, and, you know, they play with a mixed lineup of young and old, and that proved to really be an advantage, both at the beginning and at the end.
And Mitch and Bob, you see this year after year and time after time, and we'll get to the play that saved Virginia, okay? But Cassius Winston's are like gold at this time of year, okay?
Yep.
You need a wise head on the court when everything else is flying apart in all different directions. And Mitch, you know, you watch Michigan State more than Bobby and I do. Who would have thought coming into this game against the Duke Blue Devils that Cassius Winston would take the most shots in the game and essentially, for my money, be the best player on the court?
Isn't the formula, the best formula, the tried and true formula to win an NCAA championship in March Madness, a great point guard, tough defense, and a couple reliable older big guys? Isn't that
That's it? A very good way.
And a good coach.
Yeah.
Mitch, when you look at Cassius Winston, must you not think of Mateen Cleaves in a very comparable circumstance in 2000?
He's not as fast as Mateen Cleaves was, but he navigates in traffic the same way. Mm-hmm. He is like a guy. You ever play that Galaga video game, you know, where the key is to shoot at the rockets that are dropping bombs on you without getting hit yourself.
Let me just stop you right there. For me, the answer, that's a hard no for me,
okay.
Mitch, if I've ever played it.
Ask your kids. Ask your kids, because they did. It's attached to the Pac-Man. You play it in an arcade. But the point is, you move your guy around and shoot at them while they're dropping bombs on you, and you avoid the bombs. He moves exactly like that. Trust me, if anyone who's listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. He can get into the lane or, you know, right at the top of the key and manipulate between guys and not have the ball stolen. And it's just like he's just waiting until guys get out of his way, or he finds a little opening, and either he dishes it off or he throws up a little hook or he throws up a little 6 or 8 footer from there. And that is a skill that is very, very hard to find in college basketball.
You know,
you find plenty of guards who can shoot long and plenty of guards who can drive, but not that.
You know what's flashing through my head as you say that? Because I said, oh, bingo. We saw that 12 months ago, Villanova.
Yep.
I wondered how it was going to, he was going to translate his skill to the NBA because of the size, the non-athleticism that marked his game, Mr. Brunson. Another one, 20 years ago, Khalid El-Amin, who had that funny body, but he got where he wanted to go. I always say he got where he wanted to go. Guys who can get where they want to go on the court and always seem to do that, no matter somehow, some magical way, as you described it, Mitch, navigate.
20,
I like that. Same idea. That hasn't changed in historically.
20 and 10 for Mr. Winston. I mean, it's such a good story. It's a good Michigan story. It's a good Detroit story. Okay. And when he broke free, you know what I was thinking of when he broke free? It's Stephon Diggs against the Saints in that playoff game where he caught the ball and all of a sudden you realized everybody else on the Saints had gone home. That was as stunning an end as a last second shot or a last second free throw or a tip in that didn't go in, and Duke couldn't catch him. And he's running all the way to Minneapolis and they're going back to Durham without making it to the Final Four.
Yeah. Having said all that, they didn't have the game won if they somehow stopped that, because they blew it on the free throw. RJ Barrett, of all people, missing a free throw and then making one that he didn't want to make, put them into that weird situation. And, you know, two free throws and it could be going to overtime. And we can't overlook that. You don't miss a free throw at that time of year. But, you know, again, if you're a young team, that's not that surprising. I'm going to tell you a point in the game. And it's funny, when it was going on, I said to the guys who I was watching it with, remember this. No one's ever going to remember this. It's insignificant, it feels like, but this is going to be really important. And as I look it over, I believe that I was right. In the beginning of the second half, Michigan State had for them, you know, a pretty significant lead. I think it was 41-35 when Goins made a jumper. All right, I'm following this. 41-35, and it felt like they were, you know, kind of comfortable. Then Duke turned it on. Williamson made one of those three-pointers. Williamson made one of those monster dunks. Trey Jones made a layup, and they took the lead. And it felt like one of those moments where, uh-oh, there goes Duke. And what happened? Nick Ward gets the ball from Cassius. Winston gets the ball and races it up the floor after Trey Jones made that layup. Races it up the floor. Like, we are not sitting in that moment when the place is going crazy and Duke just took the lead. We are not sitting here. And he raced it up the court, and he found Ward for an easy jumper, and they took the lead back. And then it settled out again. Now, there are moments like that. No one will ever notice him because they don't come at the end of the game. But he doesn't do that. And Duke could go for three more baskets before they catch themselves. And that's what Tom Izzo loves about having a guy like Cassius Winston who leads. I thought Charles Barkley said it the best. He said he's not the best point guard in college basketball today, but he's the best leader. He knows what the team needs at that time. He knows whether it's time for him to take it or to find somebody else. And that moment, that 40, it was 42-41, then 43-42, stemmed the tide. And from then on, it was a back and forth game until the end.
And I'll tell you something else about this game. These games are so interesting because, yes, you can shoot your way into big leads. You can shoot your way out of huge deficits with three-point shots, okay? But this was a game yesterday where the two teams combined for nearly as many threes as Carson Edwards made for Purdue the other night. What did he make, 10? There were only 13 in the Michigan State-Duke game yesterday.
Yep. Warms my heart, naturally. You know, but, it was some old-fashioned game, and the score reflected it. I kept thinking, boy, this is a low-scoring game. You know, really, relatively, a very low-scoring game for teams of this caliber and with this kind of talent. Speaks to the defense that we're both Duke. It's always, under Coach K, been an excellent defensive team, and of course Michigan State's reputation is well established and the style of play and with him. And overall,
Tom Izzo did. I know that at this time of year, and we all know this, that the announcers obsess over coaches. Okay, it's like Coach K against Coach Izzo down in the low blocks. You know, boxing out for a rebound. Okay, and it's a mismake. You know, sport. It's a mismake tournament. But you know, we saw how destinies change because a couple of balls didn't fall in for Central Florida. Okay. Tom Izzo, having said all that, Tom Izzo had as he slayed his own dragon, which is Duke basketball yesterday, right. I thought he had a great day, especially in the moments when it mattered the most at the end.
And you know, it is good for basketball, Mike. Tom Izzo's not going anywhere. Michigan State's not going anywhere. If you look at how many Final Fours that he has led them to, he almost, like a lot of the best coaches, there's like a rhythm to it. Every 4 years or so, he gets to a Final Four, and maybe a couple years in a row if he's got some of the returning players. Then you know, misses out in a round of 16 or gets eliminated in an 8, and then is back again. And it's a good thing that he had this win over Duke. I know Duke doesn't feel that way, but you don't want any one of these elite coaches to be, you know, 1-12 and 1-13 and against the other one, because
it's a shocking number. It was really
crazy.
I wasn't aware of it until this year, Mitch. It really is a stunning number.
Yeah, I think the announcer for CBS said something to Izzo about like the rivalry that you have with Coach K. He goes, rivalry? He goes, 1-11 is not a rivalry. It's a trouncing, and he's right. And believe me, he thinks about it. He doesn't obsess because he knows he's got a successful program, but. By the way, can we go back to the fact that this is what college, the committee, brought upon themselves? Because in my view, both of these teams should be in the Final Four. Both of these teams should be in the Final Four. And they should not have been in the same bracket ever. Michigan State was the highest ranking number two, clearly. And now they've proven it by what they've done. And you don't end up getting, you know, the premier show that you would have
liked. Wait a minute. Where would they have been, though? Where would they have been?
I would have put them where you put Michigan and have Gonzaga be their ultimate, and they would have beaten Gonzaga. Hey, before we go on, guys, let me say this about Hair Club, our sponsor. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of their Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is a leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. You can see for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. Hey, we get it. Your hair is visibly thinning. And if you see it, you know others see it too. So get your confidence back. And the first step is to check out Hair Club. And here's how you can do that. Go to hairclub.com/hoops today for a free hair health and scalp analysis for new customers. And you can enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. That's hairclub.com/hoops. For a free hair health and scalp analysis and enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. Hairclub.com/hoops. Experience your hair and your life at its best. Only with Hair Club. We're sure you're going to love the club.
Michigan State has done what, you know, teams, and if they're cutting down the nets a week from now, then they'll have done what you're supposed to do. You grind your way to a great regular season, and then you up your game. Right. We had gone out to dinner. I was able to just miss a couple of minutes, and we had gone out to dinner, and we're at this restaurant that we go to, and I'm up at the bar, Mitch, watching the end with a guy, and I said, holy crap, they finally beat Duke. And I said, Izzo was 1-11, and the guy next to me just turns to me deadpan. He goes, 2-11 now. and that's how quick that narrative changed. And you know, this Mitch, you've watched this man's whole career, okay? If they win, the second one does elevate you in college basketball.
Yes.
And even with all the Final Fours and everything, the second one moves you into the first, not that he's not in the first class cabin, but you know what I mean? The yep. second one is like winning a second Super Bowl as a quarterback. And that's a reason that I'm sure that this is particularly meaningful for Michigan State fans.
I think he needs to get this one. I like their chances, definitely like their chances Saturday and like their chances of ultimately winning. We'll talk about that later on this week when we set the thing up. But I think it's time for him to get that second one. You know, he's been to a lot, 10 Final Fours.
I know.
You should win two. You're right. Two's different than one. It's the same thing for Super Bowl teams and quarterbacks or whatever. One is like you can name a whole load of people who just freak things happen. But he's not a freak. He's a regular. He does this on purpose. And he will now. This team, I mean, there are wins and then there are wins. Yeah, he's 2-11. But this one counted like a couple of games because will always be remembered, not only because it took place in the Elite Eight, but he stopped the juggernaut of Zion Williamson and this freshman team that was the story of college basketball all year. And everybody came close. And in hindsight, we can all look back on Duke's run here and say, hey, they could have been knocked out the round before or the round before quite easily. The basketball gods smiled on them both times, and they weren't giving them anything this time. There wasn't going to be any freak pass that bounced off a guy's head or a missed free throw or anything like that. Michigan State deserved to win, and Duke deserved to lose, given the way that they played it a couple key times.
Oh, I say one other thing? By the way, and it didn't factor into the game because it didn't cost Michigan State. That play in the corner where you couldn't tell who it went off on, that was a foul on Duke. He was all over the kid on the ground, and of course you knew they weren't going to give him a whistle there.
Bob, you're the basketball historian. Zion Williamson now joins a long list of players, and I tried to look this up in advance of this, not the least of which is Kyrie Irving, because he's from his own school, but guys like Kevin Durant, Paul George, and others who never saw a Final Four and went on to become a great Kawhi Leonard and other players, great NBA players, and he'll be an NBA name. When time looks back on it, he will not have seen the Final Four.
The studio show, Kenny Smith was a terrific college basketball player for North Carolina, had a fine career in the NBA. He was a unique North Carolina player in his time, Mitch. He played 4 years at North Carolina and never went to the Final Four.
It's not. It's not such a phenomenon, a rare thing anymore. If you're only talking about 1 year,
right.
It's very different than it was in those other these that they come in and they flash out, flash across the sky in our eyesight for 1 year. No, that's all. So it's just something worth noting. But I mean, and 1 year is 1 year.
And by the way, and when you talk about a mismake sport and a mismake event, what conversation are we having today about the Final Four and Zion and Duke if Kenny Goins doesn't make doesn't get a wide open look, but then knock it down?
No question.
Well, that was a great play, and
it was a good play, wasn't it?
It did not involve Cassius Winston. He was not an option to score on that. They talked to Izzo and all of them afterwards. The first thing was to get the ball down to Tillman down low, and if he didn't have the shot, get it out to Goins at the top of the key and have him make it. He's a fifth-year senior. He's in his master's program already. He's like us going to school. And I guess Izzo said, number one, everybody's going to be keying on Winston, so he'll be far more open. But who does he end up making the shot over? Zion Williamson.
Yep.
I mean, he shoots
yep.
over him. So if there's ever going to be, I'm sure he's going to collect that photo for the rest of his life. And if there's ever a moment that sort of says what it was about, that's what it was about.
Let's
you know.
Take a minute now to salute their big men who were the offensive linemen in the trenches doing the necessary work, you know, against the Duke front line as well. I mean, this was a true, you know, I know how cliche-ish, but how true, a true team effort. And they really, they all, the parts complemented each other so nicely in this game for Michigan State.
Yeah, Tillman is really good. Winston, obvious. Goins is really good. They have this McQuaid who had the circus shot of the year when he was going in and you know went off the backboard as he was going backwards. And they're just one of those teams. They only played seven guys the whole game, and Gabe Brown played 3 minutes. So really, it was a six guy rotation. And they beat Duke. And by the way, here's a number to put down that almost never happens. Duke out-rebounded them 42-31. Nobody out-rebounds Michigan State. I'm sure they're going to have guerrilla drills, you know, all day long today now on account of that, because Izzo hates when he gets out-rebounded, and they still won the game.
Duke didn't go deep either. This was a they didn't go deep at all. So that's just the way that game was.
Can I tell you something else about that's unique about this game? Because I was just about to talk about the rebounding, Mitch. You know how many free throws Michigan State made in this basketball game?
Two.
Bob, tell me the last time a team in an elite eight game against the number one seed made two free throws and gets to keep playing.
Yeah. Very interesting, especially, you know, Duke didn't commit any fouls. They only had three fouls. They weren't even in a position to put them on the line in the end because they didn't have enough fouls.
It's amazing. Our buddy Frank Isola tweeted out during the game, wait a minute, Duke has one foul, and I tweeted back at him. I said, it seems like less than that.
One of the great anomalies about basketball, college basketball, you know, is the idea of the foul thing that you need to have. You know, you can't use that strategy if you don't have enough fouls.
All right, listen, we could spend our whole podcast talking about this game, but moving on.
Nope.
Okay, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. But here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding to-do you do today. Let me talk about, to me, the play of the tournament, and it speaks to what we're saying about savvy point guards at this time of year. The play that Kai Clark made for Virginia, a 5'9", by the way, guard. When everybody's just saying, keep dribbling and take a fire up a three. I may be off on my math, Mitch and Bob. That was a 50-foot, no-look pass to Mamadou Diabite. Okay. And the shot was wonderful. That, you know, is a Leitner-like shot, but much like Leitner's shot, it cannot happen by, if that pass is not made, and Bob and Mitch, it was just a basketball play. You cannot draw it up. You either have that in you or you don't. The vision, the courage to throw that pass, to know how little time there was, oh my God, that was my favorite play of the tournament.
You know, I have a category each year. This has been going on for me for about 15 years at the tournament. And I always I try to identify a player who I would like to adopt. You know, this year, the winners are, there's a tie. I'm bringing two of them home. He's one of them. I had already, you know, circled him, identified him. I love this kid. The other one is Jared Harper of Auburn. We're going to talk about him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what they have in common, of course, is the fact that the first digit of their height is a 5, not a 6. Anyway, you're so right about the thing, Mike, and it was just a...
And by the way, as the great George Frazier used to say, Cassius Winston could ride on the running board, too. I mean, I wouldn't leave him behind either.
But I'm trying to find guys who aren't this clear star. You know, that don't enter in my consciousness.
How great was that play, Bob?
Let's go to the end of the play, because if Diakite follows the normal custom of 99.9% of people, he would dribble the ball once the clock would have run out. And he didn't. He McHaled it because he was the master, the all-time master of not putting the ball on the floor in those circumstances. He McHaled that ball into the basket from that distance by not dribbling. And so give him credit, too. That was a marvelous collaboration.
Once again, I mean, we are talking about, it's never sexy, so it gets lost, but we are talking about fortunes and victories that ended because of free throws. If Ryan Klein makes that second free throw, we're not talking about this. It's 71-67 with 17 seconds left. You got to have two possessions, and this whole thing is a different story. Same, perhaps, if Duke had made the second free throw instead of or the first free throw first instead one. Of missing the second one. And then the deliberate, I mean, you know, how many times do you try to practice this, you know, hitting the front of the rim or hitting the back of the rim, trying to miss? You could see what happened with Duke. You try to miss and it can go in. All those things had to happen perfectly with Ty Jerome on the free throw line, missing exactly the way you're supposed to, and the ball flying down and the pass.
Who tapped the, by the way, Mitch, I don't know this. Who tapped the ball? I mean, that was part of this too. Who tapped the ball?
I think it was Diakite. I think
know it's most likely him,
I think it was him.
I'd have to go back and look at it because that's an element to the story too.
It all worked. It all worked, Mike. And you're so right, Bob. Like instead of dribbling and trying to dunk, or that's a really hard shot because you have to control yourself. You have to just put the right light touch on it. You can't overdo it. Do you bank
that terrible?
It? Terrible
right,
middle.
That distance is the nightmare distance, 6-8 feet. It's not a layup and it's not a shot, and you don't have full arm extension. And anyone will tell you that. Ever played basketball? That's a difficult facing up. You know, very difficult.
And what we're talking about with point guards, by the way, Mitch and Bob.
Yep.
Okay, the kid who made the play did not score a basket in the game. He made two free throws. He had five assists. But boy. One of those five changed the history of Virginia basketball.
I want to say this about that game. First of all, Virginia has that awful reputation, well-deserved, of playing terribly slow and half-court, and they're not fun to watch, et cetera, et cetera. But when they had to back and forth it with the most incredible, I think, performance that I've seen by Edwards of a guard, and certainly in this tournament. That was what did they say? He had more points in four games than like the record for six. 42 points. He was a blur. His three-point shooting was out of this world, and trying to keep up with that was tough. And Virginia basically did it with Kyle Guy. You know, they were, remember, it was back and forth on exciting three-point shooting, which they ended up doing. And hats off to Edwards, who I don't know what his plans are, and I don't know what his career is going to be, and I don't know, Bob, how he translates to the NBA. He's not tall, but he's really fast, and he's the closest thing I've seen to Steph Curry in terms of shooting with that kind of aplomb from, you know, I don't care, 35 feet, 38 feet, 42 feet, 57 feet, you know, it's all the same. It's a flick of the wrist.
And I thought the last one was going down too, Mitch. I did. I know it was contested, but when you, that ball was, it was in the, Bob, it was in the cylinder.
Yeah, that's, I thought that was going down too. Well, no, there's a definite roster spot for him somewhere with the shooting. This is the prize commodity in the NBA these days is the shooting, the outside shooting, the 3-point shooting, and he's definitely will find a spot somewhere. I would be surprised otherwise. And I guess he's going to come. He's a junior, which means you know he's going to get wooed out, and then you know,
6'1", 200
that pounds. Game. I thought that game was one of the top flight and NCAA games in recent years. I thought it was a wonderful game. I really enjoyed it. And overall, on the weekend, God, I mean, we've all collectively, you know, God, I'm frightened to think how many collective years we've watched this tournament. But I know for me, that I've been watching it regularly since the first one was televised full time for me. It was in '63, Loyola and Cincinnati. Okay, so. This is one of the great weekends ever. This weekend
total
weekend was fantastic.
Can I go back to Carson Edwards for a second? Because I've been thinking about this. And I was there when Jack Givens had his big 40-point game in Kentucky won. Okay. I can't remember a losing performance like that. I can't. I know that there must have been 40-point efforts like this. Certainly not with 10 threes. But that was one of the great, you know, losing. I'm putting
nothing's jumping out of me, Mike. I'm sure I'll probably think about, you know, if I think of it, it'll be, you know, the 5 seconds after we say goodbye.
Oh, my goodness.
But I mean, that's a very good point. I can't think of anything of that stature right off the top of my head that did not result in a W for the team, no.
Well, no. I mean, when you score that many points, you know, that's it's 42, right? We had 42?
Yeah, 42.
That's
one
basket less than Michigan scored against Texas Tech, okay? Yeah. The whole team of Michigan scored against Texas Tech. So, yes, chances are if you're going to score 42 points, your team is going to win. But I thought that I agree with you. I think that was one of the better games in modern NCAA tournament history, especially because of what it meant. You know, you can get some fantastic second-round games, but it does matter what it determines. Oh, yeah. It also reminds us that for all of the talk about Virginia, because let's face it, after they got eliminated by a number 16 seed last year, everything about Virginia was filtered through that prism. Oh, yeah, well, but look what happened to them last year. Well, we'll seed them number one this year, but look what happened. Do you realize that going into this tournament, as, by the way, the only number one seed to survive, and don't we look not foolish, but I mean, in hindsight, here we were talking about a chalk tournament, and it ends up anything but chalk in the Final Four. They have lost, Mike and Bob, 6 games in the last 2 years. 6 games in the last 2 years, and several were to Duke, and one and then that freak one last year in the start of the tournament. 6 games in the last 2 years they've lost going into the Final Four. So if somebody doesn't make them a prohibitive favorite, it's only because they're still in a bit of a fog from what happened last year. But they play a pretty damn tough brand of basketball.
Mitch, something before this is random thought, but you're the perfect person to ask this. Thank God you're here about that for many reasons, but this is one. Michigan State, does the average Michigan State sports loving alum or Sparty follower prefer football or basketball if they had to put a gun to their head? Which one would
basketball.
They rather win?
Basketball.
Okay, so it definitely okay. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure, but
probably because they've had to, you know, over the years they just notwithstanding the 1 or 2 years that D'Antonio's done something there. There have been a lot of fallow years of Michigan State football, but Michigan State basketball from Judge Heathcote to Tom Izzo has stayed at a high level.
Not too many people rhapsodizing about Biggie Munn and what you're telling me now. Is that it?
Yeah, or George Perlis.
Right. Okay. Okay. Because I thought, you know, my first one of my first thoughts when the game was over was, okay, we've got four Final Four participants, three of whom are more football oriented schools than the other, and the other one I'm not sure about, and that's Virginia. Certainly Auburn. I know everything is happening down at Toomer's Corner, but I still think they'd rather win the football championship, and I would think any school in Texas would rather win the football championship.
Yeah.
But that's just interesting. And Virginia, I don't know because there's no great Virginia football legacy, but there's a lot more basketball going for it than there ever has been in football. So I suppose there probably are more.
Well, isn't it interesting, Mike, how different we're talking now than we were last week going into the these two rounds about underdogs and chalk and all the rest of it? And part of what we said still holds true. There's no 16 seeds or 12 seeds or any of that stuff here. But it's not number ones and twos waltzing in here. We got number five Auburn.
We got a 1, 2, 3, and a 5. Though.
1, 2, 3, and a 5. But the 5 and the 3 are unlikely, would we not have to say? Auburn, especially after losing their star player, and Texas Tech, who got a number 3 seed, but I don't think anybody thought was gonna knock off the teams that they did. So you got two, you know, iconic programs, and two that have never been there. And that's pretty interesting for a final.
Yeah, Mitch, here's my thing, okay? Because we talked a lot about Texas Tech at the start of this thing, and we all agreed that they were going to be in these games, whoever they play, because of the way they play the best defense. They just play the best defense, and in games like we saw over the weekend, there comes a point where you got to get a stop. Okay, but to me, the bigger surprise is Auburn. I thought Kentucky, even, you know, the injured kid came back, and I thought Kentucky, and I know how much Calipari and Bruce Pearl, you know, Mitch, you know how you hear those two teams don't like each other? Those two coaches really don't like each other, okay? Uh-huh. And I thought this would just be a continuance of the narrative that Cal always gets him, whether he's at Tennessee or Auburn. That was a shocking result, but man, oh man, guys, watching the end of Kentucky Auburn, doesn't that look like just about every game that Kentucky ever loses at this time of year, and a bunch of bad decisions all the way into the last seconds when they forced two shots and couldn't get either one to the basket? No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct. Nobody does. But make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system. All with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Well, I'll give you my quick opinion of it. I wanted Bob to go first of them X and O's, but it's pretty simple. Get in Jared Harper's way. Okay, don't let the guy slice through you right down your middle over and over and over again. Get somebody
and
on
walk
him.
Down, I mean, the lane and
right
walk down,
the lane
in the biggest moment of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that was their number one mistake, repeating their mistake over and over again. He had 26 points, and at least half of them were literally layups right off the glass that he just blew through everybody. And if you don't have a defense for that, you're doing something wrong.
Well, he's a tough kid, you know. He really, I just one of these guys that I didn't know anything about him other than the name and watching him in the tournament. Then I'm going back and reading Blue Ribbon before the season to see what they were saying about him. I said, oh yeah, I should have known more about Jared Harper. But boy, he's a tough kid. All I could think about is him as a doubling up as a running back in the off season. You know, that there's no, really. I mean, he's got the explosion. He's explosion.
Hey, can I say one other thing about Kentucky? Forget about 3-point shots. They simply abandoned shooting from the outside. I mean, how many times were they just going to pound it into PJ Washington?
Yeah. They became a one-man team.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and I'm surprised they got it to overtime. They were doing nothing but feeding him. Nobody else was doing anything. They were making mistakes. You know, Calipari, to his credit afterwards, said we got totally outcoached and outplayed, and we were still in it. You know, like, he was surprised that they were, and I was too. This was one of, I mean, considering they lost Okiki, I mean, he's not like another guy.
No.
He's their guy.
No, he's their guy. He's their PJ Washington.
I mean, I don't know how they did that. I know how, okay, sometimes you lose a guy in the middle of the game and you just pick up effort and you ride the emotion and you win the game. And that's how they got to the Elite Eight. But to start the game without him, with one day's preparation for Kentucky, and to, I think, thoroughly beat them, even though it took overtime, and, you know, it may not look on that like that in a box score, but they were the better team out there most of the night.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive. I don't know if they come back to earth or they ride this all the way through.
They're good. I mean, they can be good. They did win the SEC tournament. That's, you know, people...
With Okiki.
Yeah, with Okiki. Now, I was speaking to my good friend and the person I go to when I need to know what's going on in college basketball, Mr. Richard Hoops Weiss, before the game. And I said, you know, how big is the Okiki loss? He said, this team is deep. They're deep. They have a lot of good players. They'll be okay. That's all. Pretty much what he said. He didn't flat out predict a victory, but he said, no, they have enough good players to circumvent.
And by the way, there is a headline in the Courier Journal, the Louisville Courier Journal today, that says, is Calipari's system broken? So maybe the
really?
Boom.
Really? And that didn't take long, did it?
I mean, it's... this is from, I think it's Joe Hale's story. Yes, the coach who has built his legacy at Kentucky by recruiting more one and done players than any other program has blamed youth and inexperience once again, which that's a fair point. That is a fair point.
That's, you know, kind of hard to argue with that.
You can't say these damn kids, because you're the one who has invented this style of coaching.
Yeah.
I got to say a word here. Bruce Pearl getting to the Final Four is it's fascinating and fun and juicy on a couple of levels. You know, one is, you know, his tattered history, you know.
Tattered? Is that the adjective you were looking for, Bobby? Tattered?
Well, Mike, I'm offering up that you guys can, you know, maybe we can, you know, collectively.
Sketchy? Is sketchy a better word, Bob? Is sketchy a better word?
That's a good one, Mike. Tattered, sketchy, is dodgy. How about our friends across the pond? His dodgy history. He's got a dodgy history, doesn't he, Dow? Yes. Okay, yes. That's going to be brought up. How can it not be, right? Especially in a year when he's got an assistant coach who's, you know, he's not going to jail, right? What did a person do? I forget. He came up with a plea. How did a person get adjudicated, all right? But it's not closed yet. He's got all that behind him. He's got the reason why he had to leave Tennessee in the first place. And yet, if you know, Mike and we have a dog in this hunt, Mike, you and me, because he is, in fact, Boston College 1982, a fascinating human interest story, a manager for Dr. Tom Davis, who's not a player, has become this high-level coach.
No, I know BC people, Bob, including, I've got three BC sons. One of them texted me and said, Boston College guy going to Final Four with somebody else.
And I'll tell you what, guys, I mean, the people, of the four of them, and I don't know Tony Bennett, I love Tom Izzo, don't know Chris Beard, but I'm telling you, the one that you'd most want to go out and have a beer with, you know, would be Bruce Pearl. I mean, Bruce Pearl is a character. He's going to take Minneapolis by storm.
Well, Bob, only if you could get that lampshade off of Tom Izzo's head. You know what I'm saying? saying, Mitch? I mean, only if you know how he gets after a couple of shots of tequila. Yeah. And, but you reference Chris Beard. We got to talk about this. This is a disciple of Robert Montgomery Knight. And Mitch, again, we did talk about this defense. I heard him today somewhere saying that I forget what percentage of their practice time is spent playing defense. I am in no way shocked that they rode that all the way here.
Remember when we last spoke, we were heading into the Michigan game against them, and I said, you know, first one the 50 wins, it was absolutely true. And Michigan never got to 50, 44 points. I mean, it was ridiculous that Michigan game. I think they had 10 points, you know, with like 4 minutes to go in the first half. So now they're going to play Michigan State. It'll be interesting to see if the Texas Tech can knock off the entire state of Michigan with that defense. But here's the thing about that, and I thought that John Beilein said it best. He said, you can't practice against that. He said, we had a couple of days to prepare. He said, but you can't simulate what you're going to get with them. It's a lot easier to simulate an offensive player. Like if you're going to go up against, I don't know, you know, big guy and they toss it inside all the time to him. You can get your big guy on your practice squad and kind of pretend. But how are you going to pretend that defense? You don't know that defense until you are facing it. And by that point, it's too late. You know, the way that they shift, the way that they recover, normally, you know, when you box things up in the middle like they frequently do and don't let you get the ball inside, what's the answer? You shoot from the outside. Except that they're really fast and they recover. And so they're often in your face when you're shooting from the outside. So you don't end up with the open threes that you think you're going to get because they're jamming everything inside. They're on you on those threes, and you cannot practice against it. So no matter what Tom Izzo does all week, he can't go. Maybe he should go hire Michigan. They're not doing anything. He should hire them to come up and say, hey, what's the program need for a week? You know, how much money will it cost me to get you guys to pretend you're Texas Tech? Because that would be the best practice for a team that's going to face them.
Hey, when we were talking earlier about experience, one thing to note here about Texas Tech, who had some severe graduation. Well, they had, I don't know if it's graduation or the personnel losses from last year when they won 27 games, got to the 8 last year, lost to Villanova. People, you know, lest we forget, is that two of their starters are those
the now prized possessions of commodities, I should say, in college basketball. Graduate seniors, graduate student transfers. Okay, mm-hmm. Matt Mooney from South Dakota and Tariq Owens from St. John's. Tariq Owens, who we got a lot of whiff of him and the shot blocking expertise, and he, by the way, led the Big East in shot blocking twice while he was at St. John's. But this is the way of the world in college basketball. You talked about formulas earlier, Mitch. This is so common and so much a way of doing business now that they reloaded by, you know, pulling in two experienced guys, and here they are.
All right, listen, we will look ahead to next weekend on Thursday's Sports Reporters Podcast. As interesting as the Elite Eight weekend was, guys, in college basketball, how about the first weekend of the baseball season, okay? Yep. The Red Sox go to Seattle. They're 1-3 because their starting pitchers, who barely pitched in spring training, have given up. Mitch, listen to this. This sounds like Tigers numbers, okay? Except the Tigers are way better than this right now. 28 runs over 15 innings. So in the same weekend in the American League East, the Yankees lose 2 out of 3 at home to an Orioles team that has been compared to a Triple-A team, and the Red Sox, who have who had to go out west to start this season and have a chance to start off like 3-7, have looked awful. And the only game they won against the Mariners, they came from 6-1 behind.
It's stunning. It's totally stunning. And Mike's alluding to is the fact that in an attempt to manage the workload and the idea of 2 years in a row in the playoffs and all that, and then considering Chris Sale's fragility to start with, they pitch very few serious innings in spring training, they being the entire rotation. And it looks like they're not, the supposition is that they aren't ready.
I watched every game. Guess what? They're not ready.
They're not ready. And so how long it's going to take now? They go to Oakland. Oakland is no pushover, we know.
David Price makes his first start of the season,
yes,
after a light workload himself. So maybe he'll be the guy that looks like this plan is working. And Alex Cora is adamant that they know what they're doing,
yep,
that they, 2 years ago, the Red Sox, the big thing was the pitchers were out of bullets by the end of the season. Well, we're going to see, because again, the Yankees I will say this too, and we'll get to them on another day. Don't go to sleep on the Tampa Bay Rays, okay? Mm-hmm. Because they won 90 games last year, and they're waiting to pounce if either the Red Sox or the Yankees stumble.
Well, I suppose it has something to do with what kind of cushion you think you can build up on the far end by the time you're done, because if it doesn't, a win is a win and a loss is a loss. And if you're tagging up losses in April that you're going to need in September to make sure that you have that first place spot, because let's face it, they are in the division in the most peril of having a great record and ending up playing one game for your season. Witness the Yankees last year.
Yep.
So you do not want to finish second in the AL East,
nope,
And so every game matters.
I think these games count. Even though they were played in March, Mitch, I'm almost positive that they will count if it's a one-game or two-game lead at the end of September.
So he says, quote, "It's easy to second-guess now what we did. Nobody second-guessed us last year. It's a program. You have to be disciplined. So that's the way I see it. If people think the pitchers didn't start too many games, that they didn't have too many innings, they should get back to what we did last year in spring training. I mean, we played until October 28th, and the previous year when I got here, everybody was talking about how they ran out of bullets, et cetera, et cetera." He's standing by it. He's saying,
yep,
the famous Bull Durham line, it's a long season and you got to trust it. And I guess when your starters have an ERA of 13.2, you got to trust it.
Meanwhile, their general manager can step aside from this for a second and say, as far as our bullpen's concerned, didn't I tell you so? Because the bullpen has been exemplary. It's been fine.
No.
The bullpen, which was the only major issue that people felt about this team going into the season, all the other bases were appropriately covered, they felt, except for the bullpen. And so what happens? You heard the numbers on the starters, and the bullpen's been terrific,
Even yesterday, the way they can hit, they nearly came all the way back from 10-3 behind yesterday and won.
They don't quit. They're very,
And here's the other thing, Mitch. Clearly, already in just three games, Bryce Harper has earned back all $330 million. Don't you, Mitch? Don't you think? I mean,
well,
I'm just applying simple math.
Wins a win.
Here, Mitch.
Wins a win. I mean, they've won. So you know, that's all that matters. His presence is making them win. Apparently,
they're the only team with an unblemished slate after just four games played into the season. Which I there's a lot of.
Before we end here, and we're talking about the beginning of the baseball season, how about the end of the basketball season for LeBron James? As if it wasn't bad enough that he's going to miss the playoffs, he's just not going to play, period. And now the Lakers are spinning this, that this was our idea. Luke Walton said he wants to play, but it's one of those things where the medical staff just finally said, look, it's just not worth it anymore. Let's make sure you have a healthy summer. Okay. Whether this is LeBron James's decision, like, hey, I don't want to play garbage time, okay, or whether this is the Lakers protecting their investment, if what they're saying about him being hurt to a degree and having a sketchy groin injury, I'm going to go back to what I said, and next year and 2 years from now, I'm going to go back to that podcast where I said to you guys, a groin is not to be taken lightly at that age.
I will never doubt you on groins. I will never.
You're our resident, Mitch.
No,
you are truly
Bob,
our resident.
Right? If the subject is
age and groins. I'm not good on young groins.
You are the groin guy. You're the groin
groinologist.
Guy.
Right. You know, I know.
Call me Groinkowski.
Ooh.
So if they are telling the truth about this being, you know, something that they're concerned about, not only is that something to worry about in the years to come, it will factor into the minds of players who are considering switching teams and going to play with LeBron James in L.A. No one will say it out loud, but they will say it in private conversations to one another. Hey, where do you think the King's at? You think he's done? You think he's, you know, are we on the downside? If I sign up for 3 years over there, am I going to be, you know, dealing with a guy who's out every couple of weeks with another injury? That's how players talk. It's a cutthroat business. You can even say that about a guy as good as him.
Well, hey, meanwhile, this will give LeBron a chance to go out and scout, you know.
My last thing about this, okay, 2 points about this. Who would have thought that at this time on the sports calendar, the only joy in basketball for Magic Johnson would be watching his alma mater play basketball, okay? And who would have thought at the start of this season that the Los Angeles Clippers would make themselves into a far more attractive L.A. destination than the team with which they share that building?
Well, it's been a while for Magic enjoying MSU more than the Lakers. That's just more of the same. All right, let's go to our parting shots. Bob Ryan, why don't you lead us off?
Now, parting shots.
Well, guys, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks have the best record in the NBA. Did you know that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you realize what it means to the basketball fans in this town? That town, I mean. Well, since knocking off the Hawks in a Game 5 elimination game in 1989, the Bucks have gotten out of the first round once in the last 30 years. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals in 2001 under George Karl. I forgot about that. And then they faded away into NBA irrelevancy. Their last good decade was the 80s. And even then, they were classic B students who drank their milk to the bottom of the glass, looked both ways before crossing, and studied their asses off only to get a B. Those Buck teams were just not as good as the 76ers, Celtics, or Pistons. But they were a lot better than what followed. Now, you know, this is a proud franchise that got a title in the third year of its existence. You see, there was this Alcindor guy.
Yeah.
Ask your dad or grandpa. Anyway, these Bucks are young and exciting. But now they are burdened by expectation. That title of 48 years ago remains the only one they've ever had. Well, good luck, fellas.
Zion Williamson will go into the NBA draft now, probably as the first pick, and hopefully have the career in the NBA that everybody imagines that he will. He'll throw down dunks and become a folk hero for his new team in a new city and hopefully lead a life in professional basketball full of adventure. And maybe even that he will win the title he won't win now at Duke. And you know what? No matter how much money he makes in the NBA and how many titles he does win, he will remember the loss to Michigan State when he's old. He will remember it when he's old because you never forget the big game you lost. I remember asking my dear friend Tim McCarver one time, quite innocently, how long it took him to get over the 1968 World Series when his Cardinals were up 3-1 on the Tigers and ended up losing. Tim was getting ready for a Mets game. He had his notes on the table in front of him, and he stopped and he looked over his reading glasses at me and he quietly said, "You never get over it." Zion will be a big star in the pros, but not much bigger than the star of college basketball he became this season, when he did everything except win the big game.
Arizona coach Cliff Kingsbury has a pretty big decision to make. His team holds the number one pick in the upcoming draft, and people are debating whether he and the front office will use that pick for Kyler Murray, even though they have Josh Rosen. It's a massive decision, the kind that could affect the franchise for years. So fans might be a little nervous after learning of Kingsbury's knowledge of the rules. On a recent podcast, Sean McVay, coach of the Rams, revealed that not long ago, he and Kingsbury, who were friends, were having dinner with Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes, you know, is the KC quarterback. McVay had a friend send him a text under the name Roger Goodell. The text read, "I can't believe you're at dinner with Kingsbury and Mahomes. You know better than this. This is tampering. You're both losing picks." According to McVay, Kingsbury turned ghost white. He started panicking and saying they needed to call the front office people at the Cardinals. That's when McVay fessed up and told him the whole thing was a joke. You can't lose picks for having dinner. As NFL pranks go, it was pretty good. But as a confidence booster for Cardinals fans, I don't know. I'd be a little jumpy at how much my new coach was so, well, jumpy. Good luck with that number one pick, Arizona. Just make sure everybody, especially the coach, knows the rules. That's going to do it for today's program. We do this podcast every Monday and Thursday, so we'll be back in a few days to set up the Final Four. If you enjoyed what you heard, we're glad. You can catch it anywhere and tell your friends that they can find it, especially on the Stitcher platform and other places where you can get popular podcasts. Until we see you again, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great week.